Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave, and happy Valentine's Day to my good friend Dave Solomon in Philadelphia, who never fails to send me something sweet on any occasion, and he did that today. This is a crazy day. This is after two laptops have gone kaflooey. I am on my son's computer, but it's a really cool thing because now I can do exclamation points, which I didn't have access to do on my other two laptops. And let me tell you, nobody is worth more exclamation points than this man that you are about to hear momentarily. I told the world in the past couple of days that when I heard the CD songs from this season, I don't know what was happening in my state of consciousness, because I mean I'm of a certain age, but I don't remember Coltrane and the Great Ones in Philadelphia being in the recording studio. But my mind started to go back in time, imagining what it was like for Train or for Charlie Parker or for Miles Davis back in those days to hear live instrumentation in the studio. And I just saw them thank those involved in the studio. Hey, that was a great track. Thanks a lot for being part of this project. That's the greatness I heard when I heard Tim Green, who is a composer, arranger, and master saxophonist, and is so worthy to wear the crown of new blood continuing the genre of jazz. Tim, follow that, my friend.
That's incredible. Well, thank you so much for having me, Trish. This is really an honor. And thank you so much for your kind comments and all your support with this record. It means so much to you know, just have the music out there and just have people really like the music. Spend a lot of time on it, and to have people like it means, you know, means everything. That's what I've been doing it for people to really love it.
Well, you just did a great job, Tim, and I know that
Thank
it's
you.
In your blood, honest to gosh, because Dad and Uncle were singers, and your older brother was a trumpet player, so this kind of didn't necessarily come easy to you, but you were accessible to all the music when you were younger, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. My father is a singer. He played the bass as well. My brother's a trumpet player. And, you know, growing up in a musical type of house, you know, my parents would play gospel music. They would play the Winans. My father was into a lot of different, still is into a lot of different music, classical music and jazz and so many different styles. So that was just around me when I was younger. And I just, you know, kind of kept with it as I
yeah,
went along.
You absorbed all of it, and I really love it. Part of the reason why that this CD, which is brand spanking new, Songs from the Season, really got me. You know, Tim, you can always tell when somebody has church in their background. You can't ever get away from that, and thank God for it. You know?
Yes, indeed. It's in me, and you know, played in church and the things that different gospel artists, and it just started to become a part of my plan, and it's a big part of my lifestyle, and it comes out in the music that I write now. You know, I'm a jazz head at heart, but gospel music. I mean, everything started in church, blues, and you know, a lot of different things. So you know, that's kind of the center of all music for the most part. So I'm glad that
you
comes
are right.
Out.
And you know what? You can always tell the difference when somebody doesn't have church or an affinity for gospel,
right?
Because that's really what gives you the true soul. And it actually paves
right.
the way for a serene roadway to take, because you're already so centered that it gives you kind of a freedom to explore. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that center, you know, that type of thing, it just kind of helps you just to kind of, for the most part, just kind of give yourself, like you said, like just a center, just to know that, you know, everything outside of that you can pretty much get to, as long as you understand that what you're playing is, you know, to touch people or to dig deep. I mean, you know, playing in the church and being in situations, you know, you always have to dig deep. Like if you're playing in church or playing the solo or playing the hymn, it's not good enough to just get up there and play it and be virtuosic. if you did a great job, the oldest mother in the church is going to come up to you and say, you know, you really made me feel blessed today or something, you know.
That's the
marker for playing in church for the most part. So I guess I kind of take that into, you know, all of my playing, you know, and, you know, try to always dig deep or find something in the moment that will really kind of touch people for the most part, you know. So that's kind of my approach for a lot of music now.
Oh, I can definitely feel it, and some of the titles speak for themselves. And it's so wild because there is a female artist that's getting, and I'm not going to mention any names, she is really getting a lot of attention, and, you know, she seems to be the flavor of the week, and she's had an extended run on that. But she made it clear a couple of years ago. She talked about the fact that she had no church background. So basically her background was pop. And you know what, Tim? I hear the hollowness of the delivery. It's not the same.
Yeah. You know, I was watching an interview online, and Benny Green, great, you know, jazz pianist, he was talking about that. He said, you know, now a lot of people getting signed for different reasons because of a look. I mean, that's great and everything, but you know, everything that you play should at least have some type of blues or some type of cry in it, something that expresses some type of emotion. So, you know, we're living in a different climate now for the most part. But, you know, a lot of the times the people, the greats, you know, that have done it, like Stevie Wonder and Donny Hathaway and so many others, that music always lasts and lives on. So I'm encouraged by that as well.
Oh, yeah, you should be. Oh, my gosh. And actually, because of what you learned early on, I mean, here you were at the Baltimore School of the Arts, and that was a big deal because you were selected from over 500 hopefuls to join this 25-member Grammy High School All-Star Band. Whoa!
Yeah, that was an interesting moment because the way that started, I was I did a camp in Vail, Colorado when I was 16, I think it was. So I did that, and I was there. I was studying with John Clayton and Jeff Clayton, and Charles Stafford was there as well. And I wasn't that great, but I was around some of the highest, you know, players in high school. So I said, okay, it's time for me to go back home and just practice, you know, and try to get better because I saw the level of talent that was out there from, you know, being around that environment. So after that, I think that was my 10th grade year. In my 12th grade year, the opportunity came around for me to, you know, audition for like this Grammy band, and I auditioned on tenor saxophone and ended up getting the first tenor chair, and that was like really, really encouraging to me. And I was able, for the most part, kind of to catch up to, I guess, the status quo of, you know, how a lot of the, you know, the greatest high school players were playing at the time. There was a lot of great musicians in that band. It was Ambrose Akamushiri, Obed Calvert, who else is in? Aaron Parks was in that band.
Wow.
Matt Brewer. A lot of musicians were in that band the last time. All good friends of mine. They're really doing great now. So that was a great experience.
And this is so cool because, you know, here we go. We fast forward to current times, songs from this season. And it's a very intriguing title. I have to ask you about that. But, you know, you've built this base of friends that are 18 musicians in Baltimore because you've got some major players on here, and then you've got some folks that are major players aren't in Baltimore that have just had accolade after accolade said about you. Holy cow, do you feel like you're on cloud nine right now?
Yeah, I'm on cloud nine. I haven't been getting much sleep. I've just been really, you know, just kind of, you know, every single last comment and every email I get, every like on Facebook and retweet I get on Twitter just is so inspiring to me. You know, that's, as an artist, you know, for the most part, you want to do what's in your heart to do and put out there. And if you can do what's in your heart and put it out there and people love that, that's the greatest reward, you know, that you just really feel great about the music that you're putting out and that people feel great about what you're doing that's in your heart. So every single last, you know, like and, you know, and comment I get or email, it just encourages me. So I'm getting those all day long and returning emails, and, you know, I'm going back and even listening to the album, you know, I'm like, did I miss something? Because a lot of people are telling me, like, man, this track. So I'm, like, feeling like I'm listening to the album on, and, you know, kind of with fresh ears because a lot of people, like, picking stuff up that I didn't even really notice. So, yeah, it's been really great. The response has been awesome.
Well, you really do deserve it because you've been doing your thing for a while. And just, man, you talk about a hometown hero, having worked at WSMJ for a few years in town. Mm-hmm. We would have this little online feature called Hometown Heroes. And it was mostly the contemporary guys. And you, to me, are the very breadth of what real jazz is. But you can't necessarily be defined. You, oh my gosh, you are so incredible now. I don't know what you're going to be like in 10 years. But you're constantly evolving. But the point is, you are welcome. The point is that you have had this really classy journey, Tim. You seem to know which way to go, and you found along this path some people that were so happy to help you because they recognize this light in you. I love the partnership, the association, the friendship you have with Mulgrew Miller. That's so astounding.
Oh, yeah. Mulgrew is, I just talked to him, I think a few days ago. I mean, he's like, oh, man, what can I say about Mulgrew? He's like a, he doesn't know it, but I look at him like a, as an uncle, you know?
Aww.
Like an uncle. You know, he's, you know, you would think somebody of his caliber just wouldn't have any time to, like, even reach out, you know what I mean? But he reaches out just randomly, you know, I might be, you know, out of the country or something, and he'll just, you know, kind of reach out and send me a message or give me a call and look at your phone, and it's Mulgrew Miller, you know. That's all, every time he calls me, it's still, you know, I'm still excited, you know. It's always, you know, I get a chance to talk to him, tells me stories and stuff about Tony Williams and all this other stuff, and incredible. It's just a great relationship I have with Mulgrew. It's just really great.
That's so funny because I know that feeling so well. Each time somebody that you really respect and like a lot, you see them call on the phone, you go, oh, my God, they're calling me again.
Right. That's how I feel every time. I feel like that all the time. It never gets old. Like, I can never just, you know, be like, okay, yeah, this is just Mulgrew. He's just going, no, it's always, you know, I'm always on my P's and Q's. The TV is off, and I'm sitting there concentrated on this conversation, you know.
That's right.
It's a real blessing.
So do you think that your time, you know, you got a bachelor's degree from the Manhattan School of Music.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think
mm-hmm.
going to New York, getting out of Baltimore, and then seeing what the scene is like in New York made every single difference in the world?
Oh, absolutely. That was all I wanted to do as a, you know, when I was in high school. I just wanted to get to New York. And spending that time in New York really forced me to have to practice because in New York, you know, you can get swallowed up because there's so many musicians there. So in order to kind of, you know, I don't want to separate yourself, but kind of, you know, guide your way through a little farther, you have to just be, so it has to be something special about you, or you have to really put in the time, you know. So I remember first year I was in New York, me and a friend of mine, Ambrose Akamutra, we went to the IJE, and at the time I was just, you know, kind of meeting more people. We went to this, the IJE, which is, I think it's the International Jazz Association, something like that. But anyway, we went to that, and I started meeting all these saxophone players. I didn't know. I was like, wow, it's all these musicians that are around, and they're amazing as well. So it just inspired me to practice, and I was listening to so much music. I was, you know, in New York, and I was hearing so many different people play every time. Like, when I was at Manhattan School of Music, there were so many great alto players there. It was Jaleel Shaw was there, Miguel Janon, Will Vinson, Erica Von Kleist. And, you know, those alto players, I mean, they're, for the most part, peers of mine. But, I mean, you know, those are like the premier alto saxophone players of, you know, our time now. So while I was there, you know, I was around those people, you know. So if I didn't practice or try to, you know, get it together, I would just, just fade a little bit. But I just wanted to kind of keep up. And that type of energy of being in New York kind of really, really helped out, you know, and worked for the best, you know, so.
And you really did your homework. That's, in essence, what I was going to say, because you seem to come correct at every situation. And, man, has that been noticed, because not only did you get your master's in jazz studies at U of South Carolina at the Monk Institute there, but you were recognized by the Monk Institute as being one of the best saxophonists, and I know Terrence Blanchard had a lot to say about you, and he's not the only one. One of your instructors, Bob Mincer, Yellow Jackets fame, says you are one of the brightest saxophonists on the scene. So, baby, whatever you did was good.
I mean, Bob, I mean, I one of my favorite CDs to listen to when I was in high school was a CD that was called the GLP All-Star Big Band CD. And Bob Mincer is on that CD along with Kimmy Kirkland and Dave Reckel. Anyway, my father bought that CD, and that was one of the reasons why I went to Manhattan School of Music, because he was a teacher there. So I studied with Bob Mincer at Manhattan School of Music for a year. He lived in the suburbs of New York, so I would have to catch the train out there, and he'd pick me up from the train, and I would just stay at his house, you know, for maybe like 2 or 3 hours, and we'd practice together and, you know, things, stuff. So we were able to kind of develop a relationship through that. We still keep in touch to this day every once in a while. So Bob has been a huge supporter of mine, and I really appreciate him doing that too.
Well, he, you know, there are some people that don't fritter away their time, like Bob and like Mulgrew and Terrence. So if they're going to say something about you that's cool, they mean it.
I mean, Terrence, I mean, while I was at the Monk Institute, and he taught me so much, not so much about the notes in music, but he taught me, you know, things I'm still learning now, like just how to be a musician, you know, how to, you know, get rid of the other stuff, you know, all the notes and the changes and everything like that, but how to develop your musicianship as a jazz musician, how to not write a tune, but how to write a song, you know, not just a solo, but to tell a story, you know, so, and, you know, try to live out, you know, your day-to-day experiences within the music, more as a human being besides being a musician, you know, the same approach that, you know, Wayne Shorter and Herbie Hancock are coming out of as well, so Terrence really, really, really instilled that in me and all the rest of the guys that were at the school. So I really appreciate Terrence, you know, his influence in my life and, you know, giving me that, you know, putting that quote out there. That really means a lot to me.
Well, you mean a lot to some of these guys because you, you're breathing new life into a genre that really cries out for it. And I just love the fact that you spread your wings on this. I didn't know a whole lot about you, Tim, and I've discovered a whole lot about you in a short period of time. God, you're so impressive. What you are able to do in the way of musicianship and the folks that have gathered around you who seem to be just so happy to play with somebody who gets it. Oh, my God.
Wow. It's been incredible, like, you know, having people, you know, like Orrin Evans and, you know, Warren Wolf and Rodney Green and you know, Obed and, you know, Alan and Chris, everybody on the record, just have been willing to do the album was just, you know, just a blast. I did everything independently, so I didn't have a Blue Note Records budget or anything, so you're just really willing to just, you know, come in and really help me out with the record. I really appreciate it, you know.
And
so,
you did not. As far as Blue Note is concerned, trust me, this is going to create a buzz. If you are able to do this after a little bit of time and surround yourself with the people that you did, including, by the way, is this the correct pronunciation of his name? Because I just love his work. Gilad Hexelman?
Oh, yeah, Gilad Hexelman. Yep, that's the right way to say it.
Whoa!
Yeah, Gilad is incredible musician, guitarist. And I met him through Obed. I was looking, you know, trying to hit the sound of a guitar, and I was like, man, let me just try to add this to, you know, some of my music. And we played a few gigs in New York, and, you know, we just, you know, started to play a lot together. And, you know, I called him to do the record, and he just came in and totally just demolished everything, killed everything. Just amazing. So it's really a pleasure to play with Gilad.
Well, I want folks to hear a track, and of course, it was really difficult to figure out 3 tracks that I was going to play. You took the time to explain each track, so I didn't read the explanation until I heard the music. So what song hit me, it just got real personal for me because I love the New Testament so much. I'm a pretty
uh-huh.
spiritual person that's based in Jesus a whole lot. So
yeah.
when I read about, and hopefully this is the right way to pronounce it, Siloam.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. That's right.
I love that. I love
yeah.
that song.
Yes, yes, yes. A powerful story behind that name. Yeah,
and
I
want you
yeah.
to explain that story and why you came to write that.
Okay, absolutely, absolutely. You want me to explain it now?
Yes, so before we go into it.
Okay, cool. So Siloam is a pool in Jerusalem, and story in the Bible goes where, you know, Jesus and his disciples were walking, you know, around the time, and they were, you know, Jesus was performing a lot of miracles and things of that sort. And they were walking along, and his disciples saw this blind man. And his disciples said to, you know, Jesus, you know, what has this man done that he's blind? You know, what sin has he committed that he's blind? And, you know, Jesus told his disciples, like, you know, this man hasn't committed any sin, but, you know, the point of his life is to give God glory through me making him, you know, being able to see again. So, you know, he told the blind man, you know, to, you know, put the mud in their thighs and told him to go to the pool of Siloam and wash his eyes, and then his eyes will be made to see again. So that song represents me just basically kind of, you know, surrendering myself to, you know, God's plan for the most part, you know, just saying, okay, you know, for you to get the God to get the glory out of my life, you know. I'm just like the blind man got glory. I mean, well, just like God got glory out of the blind man's life from him being blind and being able to see again. That's the way I wanted God to get the glory out of my life. So me starting this CD with that track is just me saying basically like, okay, this is just about God, you know, just get the glory over this whole CD. So I just wanted to kind of, you know, play that song to begin the album just for me to kind of acknowledge God that, you know, like, you know, whatever my blind man situation is that, you know, whether it's, you know, no matter what it could be that, you know, I can overcome anything and that, you know, God can, you know, heal my situation or heal anybody's situation and, you know, he'll get the glory out of it. So that's basically what the whole CD is about, just kind of offering my gift back up to God, you know. So yeah, that's the story behind it.
I love
Give me
that.
The preaching on here.
I know. See, I knew you were going to take that and run with it.
every one of those titles, I can probably talk about each one for like a good 5 minutes. You know, good 5 minutes. So.
Well, I
but,
just
yeah, that's what
love that. That's pretty amazing. And trust me, the folks that are about to hear this will help you see. This is Tim Green, our guest this hour, and this is one of those glorious 6-minute tracks from songs from this season. This is called Siloam on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Well, as the kids say, that's just sick. Tim Green, songs from this season with some folks on here: Josh Ginsberg on acoustic bass, Obed Calvera on drums, Gilad Hexelman on guitar, Romaine Cullen on piano, Tim Green, alto sax. You were cooking with gas on that thing.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Woo. Gilad would stand it up as well. Ooh, oh my goodness, I was listening to some other stuff I ain't heard before.
And you know what? It's so cool because, I mean, he's Israeli. So that just absolutely makes me so happy that somebody who came from Israel is able to lend something different to the mix, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many great musicians that moved to New York and live in Israel. I mean, lived in Israel and moved to New York. Avishai Cohen, you got...
Yes.
Who else? The clarinet player, I forgot her name, but she's amazing. But so many other musicians, you know, Gilad included, you know. And Eli DeGibri, he's another one, incredible. I was just over in Israel this past summer doing the Red Sea Jazz Festival, and they love jazz so much, and so many great musicians there. So a lot comes out of that same lineage of just, you know, great Israeli musicians.
Was that the first time you were in Israel, Tim?
That was the second time.
Oh, man.
Second time. Yeah, that was the second time. I went in 2006, I think. And, just this past summer. And, you know, I'm glad I got out of there when I did. But
yeah.
I had a good time.
I know. It's one of those situations where, you know, you just have to pray that God's got it all together. And
started getting deep over there.
I know. And what can you do? You can't cry, so you have to, like, laugh nervously.
Absolutely.
Just, it's completely out of our hands, so, you know.
I love my Israeli brothers and sisters. That was the most intense security check at the airport I've ever experienced. But
of course. And meanwhile, I find out from my friend and my sister that I just spent some time with the other day, Anita King, who was touring in Israel over the summer. She was amazed because, you know, as much as the security is tight, there are kids playing in the street and there are people having coffee at the cafes. It's like life goes on. What can you do?
They don't even, you know, squinch. They're just used to that type of, you know, environment. So they just go about their day. This is great.
Yep. It's a really amazing let's take life one day at a time scenario.
Absolutely.
And
that's
another reason why this CD is a standout, because you know what? You've got these little snapshots with each song of life, and each track is so different. Oh, wow. The creative factor involved in this is, Tim, is just crazy. And I know that we've said 45 minutes for this interview, but there's so much I want to ask you. What do you want to do with songs from this season, and why is it named that way? Two questions.
Let's see. I want to do with it. I pretty much wanted to put out, you know, just a story about, you know, I just, you know, believe, and I'm sure everybody feels the same way, but, you know, art should just reflect life, you know. It should be. I was reading an article recently where Herbie Hancock was talking about the Thelonious Monk Institute, and he said something that just really stuck out to me. He said that, you know, it's not about really what you're playing for the most part, but it's about what you're saying. Like, what do you have to say? You know what I mean? Not outside of the music, what do you have to say? So for the most part, with this music, I just wanted to just put it out just to tell my story, you know what I mean? Just tell my story through music, you know, and, you know, hopefully people will like it, and hopefully they can go on a journey, you know. And, you know, being around, I had a great chance to be around Wayne Shorter while and play with him a little bit while I was at the Monk School. And his concept is with music is just, you know, it goes hand in hand just with life, you know. So, you know, it's not, you know, just trying to be a musician or saxophone player, but, you know, trying to tie everything together with life and music and your composition. This should just all be kind of in one. So for the most part, I just wanted to put it out, you know, but needing to put out a CD for a long time, and I wanted to put it out just to show the world, you know, exactly what I have to say musically, compositionally, and everything else, you know, and I'm glad that it's going to come across in that way as well. And but as far as the title, I might have said a little bit about it, but songs from this season, you know, each song on the record represents a certain time in my life or season that I like to call it, and many people do as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it might have been a point where I was reading a certain story, or or another time, you know, in my life, and there's a song in it called Chi Town that's written for my wife.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She went to school in Northwestern in Chicago, and while she was there, you know, we call it Chi Town because she was in Chicago. So anyway, that was dedicated to her, and another song on a record called Time for Liberation. That was a time where I was in at the Monk School and really got inspired while I was there. My Spike Lee came and did a master class. And, you know, each song has a different concept just based on a certain period or time or where I was feeling that time. Like the song called Peace, the song I wrote in 2007, I want to say. I moved back for the Thelonious Monk Institute, and I was just basically trying to figure out, like, what my next move was going to be. And, you know, I just went to the piano. I just started just feeling this peace about, you know, that I was in the right place, you know, and, you know, those chords and that melody came from that. So every song that I write, I try not to put it out or try not to, you know, try to keep it under wraps until I really feel like it's something that's directly connected to me or my life or some type of moment that I'm involved in at that change. So I just want to put that out there, and hopefully that will connect with people and they can kind of feel that same experience, you know, because, you know, I guess I feel like that's what people want to hear. They want something that involves a story, you know what I mean? Not you just necessarily playing. For the most part on the CD, I open up a lot of songs, but I just really wanted to convey a melody or really convey a certain type of thing to people to hear or whatever the mood of a song was. You know, I just kind of wanted to convey that for the most part. So that's the long or the short of it for the most part.
And it's so cool because sometimes it can make all the difference in how a title is worded. So the intriguing part of the title for me is songs from this season. So that you can constantly let people be aware that whatever they're going through, there's a song on this CD for them.
Wow. You know what? I didn't even think about that. Because that's really cool. I didn't even think about that concept. Yeah, because every song, I have a song on there that represents, I guess, a lot of different things. So a song represents hope, the name Hope, Peace, or a song on there, Don't Explain. That's about a relationship. You know, Billie Holiday's Don't Explain.
Oh, God, yeah.
That song, you know, the words of that song is pretty heavy. But that was a season in my life where, you know, I was in a relationship and, you know, the relationship broke off, like the song says, you know, hush now, don't explain. You know, I'm glad that you're back, but don't explain. You don't have to explain anything, just, you know, come back. So that was a certain season in my life where I was, you know, experiencing that type of story. And I started to put that on there. So, like you said, that's really true. I didn't think about that. But, you know, that those songs will live on based on, you know, similar seasons or times that people will go through, including myself. So
it will always
that's really cool.
It will be relevant for whenever somebody hears it. And the reason is because you allowed yourself to be obedient as to when the songs came forth.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I just, you know, for me, I just really have to be inspired to write for the most part. I'll sit at the piano and I'll write something, but it just has to just hit me, you know. Just, not to get too deep, but I feel like, you know, God just has to give it to me, you know, like, has to be just given. Like, I have to feel like the song is a gift to me to give back, you know. It's not necessarily this is my song, just like God giving me a gift, like, to give back. And I think that's the thing that Wayne Shorter and all great musicians and composers, like, they, everything and the way they write music is not forced. It's not like some idea that, you know, it's forced and you're just putting it out, but it's like a gift. That's why we still play Footprints now. That's why we're still listening to Wayne Shorter, the Infinites, and listening to, you know, this all great Miles Davis's Blue and Green. That's one of my favorite, you know, stories. And, you know, those type of songs, because they're like, they're really gifts that you get, you know what I mean, and that you're supposed to put out to the world, you know what I mean? So that's kind of how I see it for the most part. Just coming, like I said before, kind of coming out of that Wayne Shorter, you know, type of approach to music and just how it's supposed to be intertwined with life as well. So, yeah.
And you know what? One of the songs that you haven't mentioned, but I took note that this was the hardest song to do, the song that you put the most time in, and the
oh,
song
yeah, yeah.
that spoke to me is Shift.
Shift, that's the, I wrote that in the, I don't know if you call them liner notes or just notes I wrote about the song, but I wrote that in a note that was, you know, gospel music is a very specific style, and everything has to be a certain way. There's an industry standard to the way gospel music is supposed to sound. It's constructed very well, and there's a certain perfection that goes into it. So that song is a song that I spent a lot of time on, just trying to get it to sound like a kind of a gospel-y type of thing. But yeah, that's another song I wrote. I was at I was at a gig, and they had a grand piano there in the church. And after the gig was over, the piano was open, everybody had left the church. And, like, you know, the acoustics there were really great. So I just started playing the piano, and this melody came to me and turned into that song. So, and at the time, I could kind of feel a shift in my life happening, so I decided to call it Shift. So yeah, that's one of my favorite tunes on the record.
I figured that it was because, you know, if you're going to be dramatic enough to call it one word like Shift, there's a whole lot of stuff that you can think of.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, this is chock full with some deeply involved musicians. This is Tim Green, our guest on Hybrid Jazz, and this is from Songs from This Season, and it's just called Shift.
Thank you.
chat room is going crazy. We are digging those melodies so much.
Wow, wow. I appreciate all the support. Everybody that's listening. Thanks so much.
Oh, you are so welcome. And I'm gonna let you go, but tell us, this is great timing for this interview because the CD release party is in a couple of days.
Yes, the CD release party in Baltimore is going to be this Saturday at the Baltimore School for the Arts. That's 712 Cathedral Street, and it starts at 8 o'clock. And you can buy tickets at www.truemelodymusic.com. It's www.truemelodymusic.com. And our tickets are on sale, $15 and $12 to students, and it's going to be a great time.
Oh, no doubt.
We're going to play all this music live, and I'm sure it's going to go many places.
Woo! And who are you going to have with you?
I'm going to have Warren Wolf playing vibes. I have Chris Fun playing bass.
Great.
I have Alan Johnson playing piano and Quincy Phillips playing drums.
Woo! That's really some A-teaming right there. That's great,
Tim.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well,
all my brothers.
yeah, and they really just the teamwork involved in this, the chemistry was so. There's such love put into this album, no joke, Tim. It's really beautiful for us. You are so welcome. Thank you for this. I will see you. I'm planning to go on Saturday,
okay.
So I'll
awesome.
See you.
Okay.
Yep.
See you then.
Yeah,
thank you
so much. Very much.
Thank you very much, Trish. I appreciate the support.
Absolutely.
Okay. Talk soon. Thank you.
All right, Tim. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
He has got some kind of schedule because on top of everything else, you know, he's got to do his business during the day. All of these cats that have paid their dues in such a significant way in jazz, and especially the folks that are involved in Baltimore, they do other instruction or other private tutoring or so much to just keep it rolling on the side. So I appreciate the 45 minutes, a little bit over, that he spent with us. And I'm going to play this for you. He does. Tim does not know that I had intended to play this third track. But there's such a myriad of different kinds of emotions from songs from this season. I wanted to make sure that we played this because it's Valentine's Day, you know. And this particular song is a little something he alluded to. This is what it says on the liner notes. Chi-Town is probably the only song that I have ever written that has the feeling of love and romance. My beautiful wife, Anoa Green, is the inspiration behind it. This tune started with the approach of a traditional ballad, but then I decided to add a Sister Cheryl type of groove to add a different approach to this project, and it worked out great. This is there's so many standout tracks. I love each and every one. But I wanted to make sure we played Tim Green, who is so current as far as what jazz is all about in 2013, and then back it up with a track that I know you're going to recognize. This is Chi-Town, Songs from This Season, Tim Green on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. just love that track. Seemed to be a perfect choice to play on Valentine's Day, because that's the real meaning of being a Valentine anyway. I am here for you. Debbie Poole, and we have an announcement to make. Debbie Poole has a new website. Oh, it's so pretty. Here's what you do. You go to www.debbie-poole.com, and you can see some fabulous pictures. You can buy In the Midst of Love, which is an awesome CD. Debbie's voice is so incredible. And I have to say, we had the best time the other night. Oh, my. Did Sister Child here need this night out? Went to where Debbie lived, and we rode together, and we met up with Tracy Hamlin and Anita King and the wonderful Cecilia. So we went to this really fancy restaurant where we were spoiled. You know, the kind of restaurant where the waitress picks up something real quickly, and she said to me, would you like me to come out with two bottles of the Sauvignon Blanc so you could taste both and see which one you like? Oh, that is so good. And Debbie had the best time, and we were there to celebrate the fact that she is engaged. And we're trying to put our heads together as to a road trip to Houston, Texas, because that's where Debbie has her eye on a wedding dress. If this is news to Matt, I'm sorry, Matt, but we have to tell you that we're thinking of doing a little road trip, and our friend Gianna Welling hopefully will help us with this, because we don't know the salon that it's in. I happened to find it and put the picture on Facebook. Debbie saw that picture. She can't talk of anything else. So we have to find the dress. I'll post it again if you haven't seen it. It is just gorgeous, and we know that she will look like a goddess in it. So we'll keep you apprised of that situation. In the meantime, go to debbie-poole.com and look her up and hear some glorious tracks. She's just, woo, it was really wonderful to have dinner with three divas the other day. And Debbie's doing more and more dates, and I'm really happy about that. And Matt's in the chat room. Thank you for doing everything that you do, Matt. We know that you love Debbie, and she was there for you. Yes. Coltrane and Ellington, actually from Duke Ellington and John Coltrane, in a sentimental mood. At the time, Duke was 63, John was 36, but their playing together was seamless. Duke really, at this particular stage of his career, wanted to surround himself with some young cats. He perceived that John Coltrane was a genius. Coltrane was very grateful that Duke afforded him the opportunity, and what they turned out on this album, Lord. That particular track, In a Sentimental Mood, was composed in 1931 and recorded with an orchestra the same year. It was written on the spot in a tobacco warehouse in North Carolina, at the request of a friend of Duke's who wanted to impress a girl. So he decided that in 1963 it would be really cool, or actually 62. Actually, they recorded it right around the time that John Coltrane was celebrating a birthday. And it was released in 63. And Elvin Jones was on drums on that. And I wanted to play it right after Tim Green and a romantic song he wrote for his wife called Chi-Town from Songs from This Season. If you enjoyed those three tracks that you heard, let me tell you, each one of them is different. And when you get to the track called Time for Liberation, which Spike Lee inspired, your head's going to spin. Seriously, there's a couple of tracks on here, Psalm 1 and Philippians 4:13. There are songs called Don't Explain, Billie Holiday Song, Pinocchio, The Wayne Shorter Song, Lost Souls, Peace, Hope, Dedication. You can tell where he's coming from. Tim Green is a very positive person, and it was a pleasure to be able to play the songs and talk to him. And that CD release party, if you're a friend of his on Facebook, make sure you go and see what it's all about. Maybe I'll see you there. Valentine's Day. Let's play some more romantic songs, okay? Oh, romance. Love to Do, this song a descendant of Johann Sebastian Bach, as a matter of fact. I just discovered that David Bach, on keyboards, who is just a master at them, went to school in Frankfurt, Germany. So he not only is of the bloodline as Johann Sebastian, but actually went to school in the homeland. This is a rendition of Sting's Wrapped Around Your Finger from the CD called A Deep Breath on Hybrid Jazz. Warmer in here. I must tell you that you're going to have to indulge me because it's Valentine's Day. For those of us who do not have Valentine's, we have to live vicariously through those who do. So we have a little wishful thinking in that mix. And, you know, part of that wishful thinking is a man with an overbite. Can I just say, woo, Jeffrey Osborne, man from 1986. Have Sweet Mercy, originally called You Should Be Mine. But his daughter, who was very young at the time, used to say, Daddy, could you sing that woo-woo song for me? So, in parentheses, you'll forevermore see You Should Be Mine, in parentheses, the woo-woo song. So, there's that little story. Jeffrey Osborne. From the CD Emotional, his fourth one. Now, I must tell you that Jeffrey has a new album out. And here's the scenario about Time for Love. At first, talking about this, it might not exactly thrill anybody to know that Jeffrey was redoing a bunch of songs that were made famous by somebody else. However, there were superior musicians involved, some of the names that you know, that were actually in the studio in Jeffrey's presence. So it was a live, let's play music together, and not you send me a track through the mail kind of deal, which is a beautiful thing. Secondly, it was produced by George Duke. I don't think you need any more than that. I would certainly argue with you if you did. But the album is really getting some accolades, and I posted something to my Facebook page earlier, Jeffrey's interpretation of Smile, the Charlie Chaplin classic, done so well because he knows all of the songs by heart, and he had such a good time. He was just putting his own spin and feeling it. Oh, my God, I just love him so much. I think you can tell. So we also heard from the Philadelphia-born Shirley Scott and her trio. Shirley, wish she was with us, passed away in 2002. The track you heard was the amazing Make Someone Happy, the Betty Comden, Adolph Green, Jules Stein song from back in the day. When you hear that organ do that song justice, isn't that great? Otis Finch on drums helping her out. You can actually get that on the For Members Only / Great Scott albums that were done back in the early 60s, but it was on Great Scott. And you need to find out what you need to find out about Shirley Scott, because she was not only a band leader and composer and a woman of raw substance on that Hammond. She was indeed called the Queen, but she was also an educator, and in Philadelphia jazz circles, she was the shiggity. When I hear her, it just takes me to another place, and I'm missing our BJ in the chat room. BJ has been with me from the beginning on Hyper Jazz, but she got a great job, and she can no longer be in the chat room with us. So every time we play an organ, I'm going to think of Beej. So thank you to Griselda and Yolanda and Matt and Amy and our guests who have been back and forth today, and we'll get to some more tunes. There may be a little surprise before now and 4 o'clock. I'm not quite sure. This was a late plan. Let's see if the plan comes together, because the person that I'm speaking of is on the road. If he can get to a phone and things aren't too crazy for him, he's going to give us a call. So keep your fingers crossed. We heard, too, from David Bach and his consort, A Deep Breath Wrapped Around Your Finger. Mm-hmm. David Bach, if you are listening, if I missed your birthday, happy birthday to you. I know it was in February sometime. I think I got to you. I'm not sure. David is an award-winning pianist and composer. He had on this album a who's who of the best in both D.C. and Baltimore. Amazing work. If you see him in person, he's got an entourage of folks with him on that stage. It's breathtaking. And you'll know now to buy the CD, because it's called A Deep Breath, his third one. Ben Williams. Oh, my, one of those other young cats like Tim Green, who really has made a difference and continues to make a difference. Just saw him the other day on the Grammy pre-show. Small favors, of course. Get to see some of the jazz and R&B acts before the primetime show. But there was a lot of good music and a lot of good people talking, and happened to see Ben Williams on stage with one of his bosses, Pat Metheny. Ben just won his first Grammy for his association with Pat and Pat's Unity Band. So it was real cool to see this Washington, D.C. child with his beautiful little locks. I love the way he has his hair. Talking about what a thrill it is and thanking his mom for turning him on to jazz. This is from Ben's own State of Art from a few years back, 2011, actually. This is one of those songs that just flows with Valentine's Day. Moonlight in Vermont on Hybrid Jazz. Thank you.
The very thought of you makes my heart sing like an April breeze on the wings of spring. And you appear in all your splendor. My shadows fall and spread the misty charms in the hush of night while I'm in your arms. I feel your lips so warm and tender.
Now, look, I told you at the start of the show that it was going to get warm. And I am not kidding. Oh, my goodness. It's just perfect timing that I played that song, too. Chris Botti with his good friend Paula Cole. I know somebody else who has tackled that song. There are a few people on this earth who can do a classic like that with such credibility and passion and verve and truth, and one of them is on the phone with me. I am so glad that he is. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to give you a Valentine's Day gift, because if I had a voice to choose who could spend a little time with us today, it would be Kevin Whalum. Kevin, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I am so tickled that you got an opportunity from the road to call.
Oh, bless your heart, Trish. I really appreciate you and everything you say and post and do for not only me, but just jazz in general. And I knew that if I had the time, I would make it happen. And it just so happened that I'm on the road right now, so there's really no better time to spend a little time talking to somebody.
Oh, my God, that is so sweet of you to say that. And look, I appreciate what you say, too, because we really need to put pedal to the metal and get real honest about music, and I appreciate your candor on Facebook so much.
I was raised by a man who never bit his tongue, and you either loved him or you didn't. But he was never gonna spare your feelings just because you wanted him to. And I think too often we want people to assuage us and we want people to massage us. And the best love comes from those people who just, they keep it real and they're honest with us. And Because when you get a compliment or a hug from somebody who is real with you, you know how real that hug is.
And
that's the kind of guy he was. And while I never endeavor to hurt feelings, certainly, if feelings get hurt from my honesty, that's another issue. And I think political correctness is one of the worst things that ever happened in this country, because people began to be really too cautious and considering feelings and people who they would not otherwise even respect.
Yeah.
And you know, if you don't respect somebody, why should I be duty bound to honor them or to save them from hearing the truth? And I tell you, I've got very thick skin. I have been, you know, rejected a bunch of times in this industry, and it just makes me cut right through all of the nonsense and get right down to it, you know. And I think that is something that I try to nurture and cherish. I try to give love as often as I can. But when there's something that I think is wrong, I got to speak on it.
Well, and here's the thing. It's really funny that we would have this conversation, because in the first hour, I had one of these young cats in Baltimore, Tim Green, who was just on fire with his brand new CD. And he was raised in the church. And
uh-huh.
And when you are, when you have that very basic assimilation into truth, you come from a place where it doesn't matter what anybody says. You know what you're all about, because you've only been taught the truth from a very young age.
That's right. That's right. And I respect other people's viewpoints.
Yeah.
As far as what they want to believe and what they want to espouse, certainly. But don't come to my Facebook page and try to shut me up. Okay? Don't log in and post something under something that I posted from my heart, simply because you disagree with it and you want me to apologize to you for saying what I think is true. That's not ever going to happen on my page. So
you can go to your page.
Yeah, you can go to your page and write whatever you want to write, but don't do that on my page and expect me to go, you know what, I'm so sorry that, you know, you don't agree with me. No, it's not ever going to come from me. But, you know, God bless them. You know, everybody's got an opinion.
How many friends did you defriend or that went away in 2012, because we had quite the climate? Whoa!
Right. Yeah, that election year was something, boy. It made people's real colors come out. Well, I tell you, there are so many times when I'm just not in the mood to respond to the vitriol. And I just let stuff go. But boy, there are times when I am primed and ready to retort, and I take time. I don't care how long it is. I don't care what else I have to do that day. I have to sit down, and I can never do it from my phone. So I have to make sure that I'm at a laptop or a desktop or something, so I can type this stuff out.
Well, here's the thing. The bottom line is, I go through conflict all the time. You may too. God uses the people that he can use wherever you are at this moment in time. He's not asking people to be perfect. He's asking you to be truthful.
Right.
So knowing that, some people will chafe at that, and some people who walk in any kind of light will get accosted, as you have found out through the years.
But the fact that
you have to be what you are supposed to be, and I think that you're in a few different ways a torchbearer. You are my go-to guy. It's not that I respond all the time, because I don't want to be one of these groupies that constantly go to Kevin Whalen page and go, you know, let's keep saying, never you.
You would never be considered that. No, come on, no. You can respond as often as you like.
You know what? There are an awful lot of folks who are yes people. Oh, yes, Kevin, that's so fabulous. I agree 100%, Kevin.
Well, I don't. None of those people live in my house. I can guarantee you that.
Well, you got the cards stacked against you because you've got a beautiful wife and two beautiful daughters. You have some trouble in River City because those two girls are so unearthly gorgeous, Kevin. What are you going to do?
Oh, bless your heart. I appreciate you saying that. I'm just trying to raise them right. That's all. I'm just trying to, you know, I'm not one of those dads who tries to lock them in the basement until they're 30 and you know, never want them to experience life and hang out with their friends. I'm not that guy. I try to be as you know, as fortified as I can be in raising them with guidelines, and they understand that because I go out of my way, I think, to really go explain some of the reasoning behind the thing. There's sometimes when I have to say no, I don't just say no and leave it there unless nothing else needs to be explained. But sometimes I feel like, you know, these are young people. These are young humans, and they have questions, and they deserve to have answers. And so, you know, we have really wonderful conversations as we ride around the city. The two of them and myself, and I can say that I have a bond with them that I imagine many fathers don't have, and I'm not trying to elevate myself. I'm just saying that because I don't have a traditional job, a 9-to-5, where I'm up and out of the house every day at 8 o'clock, and I don't see them until after school, and I get home at 7 or something like that, and we've got time to hug and eat dinner, and then they go to bed. I'm not that guy. So I was at home with them from the time they were 3 months until they were 18 months every day.
Wow.
And because I have that kind of schedule. Now, I'm not saying I never work. I'm saying that as a musician, my work is on the road or in the studio, so I can kind of take a weekend here or there and go and make my living, but then I'm back home most times during the week unless I have a cruise or an out-of-country trip or something. So by and large, they were connected to me in a very deep and abiding way from an early age. So they didn't know not having a dad around. And the bond that I have with them now is manifesting itself because they're 13 going on 14. And we have really, really in-depth, meaningful conversations about things that they say that their friends never want their parents around. And that our friends always say, we don't want our parents to come to this school function. I don't want my dad to know that so-and-so. And they're like, really? And that made me feel so good because
oh, yeah.
They want me in their lives. They want me around. They talk to me. I listen. I pause the television when they want to talk to me. The television does not outrank my kids.
That's beautiful.
And I think that oftentimes we can get too busy. We can get too caught up in the day's news or some show that we're watching, and we give those, uh-huh, yeah, sure, and we're not even listening. They're talking. But we're just looking at the screen and pacifying them with one word or two word answers.
Oh, you're telling
me. I try to really pause the television and turn my attention to them and respond and actively hear what they're saying. So I don't take my job as a father lightly. It is the reason I'm on this planet. Music is a gift, and I'm happy to share it. But it is in no way the most important thing that I do. My life.
Well, you have given them a gift in variable ways, but here's one of the things that's going to manifest itself. You have given to them a healthy notion of a relationship that they could possibly have with a mate if they choose to go down that path. That's
yep.
Amazing. And we all need to be schooled as parents on what that means. I heard Michael Basden say something. It's not that I get a chance to listen to him all the time, but he was so passionate yesterday. In closing, before he got off the radio, he said, we really need to focus on the people that we bring into the world. These babies that we bring into the world turn into people, and we've got to be accountable for what we do with them when we bring them into this world.
Oh, if there's anything more important than that, I need to know what it is.
Exactly, exactly. I hear you.
I mean, it's, you know, I think that while training up kids is the most important job, I think the second most important job is to reach out to adults who never got certain basic things from their upbringing. And we need to remember that not everyone was raised equal. Not everyone was raised with a guiding hand or a hug or a pat on the back or any type of affirmative anything. And so when those people, you know, come up and the only thing they care about is money, the only thing they care about is how they look, who they're seen with. I mean, they have no moral compass. They have no center. And we need to reach back to those people and say, hey, if we can get you to be honest about what you need, we can help you. But if you keep this tough facade up, like you don't need anything, you're tough, you made it on your own, you didn't have a mother, you didn't have a father, you didn't have this, and you made this thing on your own. If you keep up with that foolishness, you're going to just languish away.
Oh,
yes. If you come to somebody real and say, I'm hurting, I've been hurting for 20 years, I never got over the hurt of ABC, and I need to talk to you, and I need blah, 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 I just can't imagine that there can't be positive growth out of that conversation.
And you know, we'll turn our attention to your music in a second, but you've said something really important. I tell my son, who is going to be 21 in April, because we've talked about some of his friends, and what we like to say is that some people never had the blueprint for happiness. So what do you do to change that blueprint? You know, this is where unconditionally loving has to step in and never giving up or never letting go, because some people just don't grasp what it means to have a sense of humanity. Man, you talk about folks needing prayer.
Yeah, they don't even grasp it. They don't have a sense of it because they've never seen it, felt it. I've dated women in my younger days. I've dated young girls who didn't even appreciate how good I was treating them, because they were raised by single moms who were bitter at their mates, or bitter at their exes, or the girl's father, and they beat them down verbally every chance they got in front of that girl. And so the girl grew up learning this patois, learning this language of distrust, and the man is always wrong, and ain't no man no good, and all of that. So they grow up with this because they see their mother and their biological dad at odds 95% of the time. And so how are they going to learn to respect or see what a good guy is? So a good guy to them is a nerd. A good guy to them can't do anything for them. You don't even curse at me. You don't even grab my arm. You know, I mean, it's really psychotic, some of the ways that these women would behave. What's wrong with you? I mean, who did this to you? You know, I mean, how did you get this twisted up? And I got to the point where I realized, because they were looking at me like a dog hearing a strange sound, that they didn't even recognize that what I was doing was trying to love them. And,
isn't that
you know,
sad?
And trying to just put some joy in their lives and do some things with them, take them out, do nice things. They did not understand what that was. And it of course, doomed any possibility of any long-term relationship. So, yeah, you know, we've got to have a way to reach back and infuse grown-ups who need it with what they need, which is love, and show them what it really means, you know. But right now I think what we are is on schedule because the Bible is clear about how society has to deteriorate and before the Lord comes back. And so I just figure with all of this, you know, political assassination and actual assassination going on, that we're right on schedule, and the Bible has never been truer than it is at this very moment.
Ooh, Kevin, wow, that is a whole nother conversation. Oh, my gosh. And now I see, you know, with you saying what you've said, now I understand why every single one of your songs through the time that we've been listening has been so credible. You always have the ring of truth because you really do believe and love people. And that comes out every time you open your mouth. Do you know that you are such a throwback to the greats from the 30s and 40s and 50s? It's just you catapult people back in time to a place where it was safe. Whenever I hear you, I feel safe.
Wow. Wow. I don't even know how to respond to that. I'm grateful.
Oh.
Wow. You know what? Let me say this to you. When people like yourself take the time, first of all, to either approach me in person or say something in a conversation on the phone like this, I'm so humbled because it is in lieu of actual riches. In lieu of actual currency, these words are my currency. These words are what I look at as validation for what I do in my career. I'm not a rich man. You know, I make a living. But when I question sometimes why I'm not maybe why my pockets are not deeper, or why I'm not, you know, in a place of, you know, financial absolute, you know, stability sometimes, I look back and I look at these you can't quantify some of the words that people say to you. And so when people, I've seen instances where, you know, somebody will approach a person, give them a sincere compliment about, you know, a performance. Oh, man, you were incredible tonight, and blah, blah, blah. And the person with this pseudo humility, I had my stuff tonight, man. I'm just, I didn't have. I think that's rude because you don't know what this person, what they're made of, what their makeup is. What if this person is painfully shy and it took everything they had to overcome that shyness, to come up to you? They talked themselves into it. They never do this. They talked themselves into going up to you and giving you what they think is, I can't thank you enough for your talent, for what you just did. And you blow them off like, I wasn't really blah, blah, blah. I just, you know, I can't fathom that type of attitude. And so when you say these things or when other people have said things, I really do receive it and I appreciate it. And then I thank God for it because it just infuses me with more determination to keep going and to keep doing and to keep writing. And to go through the hardships and to go through the lean and down times, it just keeps me going because if I can write a word or sing a phrase that somebody actually says helped them through something, I am doing what I'm supposed to do in my professional life. You know what I'm supposed to do in my personal life, and that's raise my kids and be a good husband to my wife. But in my professional life, I need to move somebody closer to truth, move somebody closer to the kingdom, move somebody closer to being in love with somebody. You know, these are the things that I am supposed to do. So I appreciate the things that you say.
Oh, well, look, there's so much, and I sure don't want to embarrass you, because there's just so much to say. When I saw you, I've seen you a couple of times, but most notably on that stage with The Gospel According to Jazz, Part 3, when you something happened in there that night. Holy Spirit took over that building at Reed Temple in Maryland so much. There were so many instances, and you came forth, and we needed to have somebody to voice it. There were a couple of voices that night, Layla Hathaway among them, but you as the strong male person who just filled that building with spirit and warmth and a feeling as though everything was going to be okay. That's what you do. God gave you that, and there are very few people who can convey all of that, Kevin.
Oh, wow. It's
blessing. Just amazing.
I appreciate it. Let's talk music because I'm about to cry now.
Okay, all right. And the reason why you're calling, bless your little heart, is because this is going to be really big. This beautiful romance language tour continues. I hope it never ends. And you are going to be in D.C. in 2 days.
Tomorrow night.
Oh, tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night. Yeah, with Kirk and Shante Moore is going to join us. And so we're really excited. You know, I love D.C. just because, it's just a powerful place to be.
Yeah.
I love performing at Blues Alley. I love the Capitol Jazz Fest. And I have already said this is not a secret to any of my close friends, that when my kids graduate, I will be moving to that area.
Really?
I'm going to that part of the world, and it's just calling my name. I can't explain why, but you know, everything from go-go to the restaurants to the culture to the politics and all of the things that really motivate me to want to be out of my house and around people, they reside in that area. You know, I don't know if it'll be Maryland, Virginia, or an actual D.C., but I will be around that area within the next 10 years.
Oh, wow, that's really exciting. Well, God knows. I mean, this whole corridor, we've said this over and over, Baltimore, D.C., Virginia, up the road is Philly and New York. You can't find a better area for music of all kinds, but especially if you're delving into soulful or jazz, the roots are unbelievable.
Yep. Philadelphia, you got New York. Yeah, it's just... it's such a great area. I've never had a bad time in that place. And so I've got friends there. I've got family there. So, yeah, it's just the next step for me. I honestly never have chosen, a place that I just want to call home forever until I said that. Because once, you know, I lived in Chicago, which still has a large piece of my heart. And my hometown is Memphis, Tennessee, and that will always be number one just because that's home. But I've lived in Atlanta. I've lived here in Nashville. And I tell you, D.C. is next on my hit list. I mean that.
That's awesome. Well, here's what you're going to do. You're going to gain some major weight when you do move because the food is off the chain in this region. You know.
I believe it. I know it, and I'm already gaining weight, so I don't need any more. I've got my hands full and my pants full with the weight that I have now.
Well, look, we'll have to work on that between now and the time you move, but this is going to be real serious because I did not know, I wrote to you the other day, did not know that it was going to be you there with Kirk. I knew Shante, of course, was going to be there, but my Lord, you've got two glorious voices, male and female, and then Kirk on sax. This is going to be happening, and I think that you're just about sold out, are you not?
I've heard, you know, I've had so many people contact me, you know, I've got college friends and whatnot up there that, you know, trying to find out if I had tickets. I said, man, my tickets were gone so long ago, you know, I only have a certain number of comps anyway, and they were gone way back when. So, yeah, I can't imagine that if there are any tickets left, they are hanging on by a thread.
Well, and you know what? This is so awesome because there's going to be a few things happening tomorrow night. Folks are still going to be in the afterglow of Valentine's Day, which is essentially Thursday, but we call it Friday A in this area. Tomorrow, they're still going to be celebrating and through the weekend. There are a couple of shows that are so hot on the same night, but this is the show that's getting the buzz.
Okay, okay. Well,
yep.
I'm glad to hear that.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
always happy to hear that. you know, I just in the last week have performed, I've tipped my hat to Chuck Brown musically. We did a set with some friends last night in Mississippi, and I did another set last Saturday night in Nashville, both of which I took a go-go groove and just put, you know, other songs on top of it like Chuck would have done.
Oh, wow.
I mean, tell you, people were just grooving. It was so much fun because they were, I'm sorry, I was getting a call coming in, I guess. They would hear these familiar melodies and then hit the doggone floor, not realizing that they were going to be dancing. They didn't even consider that they were going to come in that place and start dancing. They didn't even know they were on their feet. Because it was just so much fun to just think of a song. And, you know, when you've got the right cat behind you, you don't have to sound check these things. You can just call stuff out that everybody should know. And, you know, when you call out September or you call out something by Prince or you call out some Barry White or something and you just keep that same go-go beat going and throw these tunes over, those people go insane.
Yes.
So Chuck Brown really had something going on. I really, really dug the man and his music. And I listen to him almost weekly. I really do.
Well, you know, and there's another side to Chuck. I love when he got together with Eva Cassidy because he did not figure this was going to be a little white girl when he finally met her. And she brought out something in him, and he brought out something
right.
in her. He always wanted to be this crooner. He wanted to croon. He wanted to sound like you.
Oh, wow. I don't know about that. But
oh, yeah. But, you know, when they did The Other Side, people went, what? Chuck, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But there was just so many sides to him. He was so gifted in so many ways.
He was a musician. And musicians
yeah.
have to be free to indulge themselves in certain ways, in certain arenas. It's almost like I call it the Frankie Beverly and Maze disease or syndrome where the fans won't let you do anything else. They won't let Frankie turn the page. They won't let him turn the corner. In his career, he can't release a new record because it won't be accepted. All they want to hear is Happy Feelings, Joy and Pain, Back in Stride, Running Away. I mean, when you've got songs that are that strong in the lexicon, and when people hear, what are you doing? I'm sorry. You know how you drive and people do crazy things.
Oh yes.
When you hear those songs from the first downbeat, I mean, when you hear when you hear that, you are like transported to another place because that is a powerful, powerful thing to have when you write a song that everybody relates to or can remember where they were when they heard it, you know. So, you know, unfortunately, he has the syndrome of not being able to go new. You know, and so did Chuck Brown. Chuck couldn't really. He could make a new record, but it better be go-go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And,
I know.
That's unfortunate to the artist in him, but to the, you know, to the person trying to make a living. Hey, what else you need?
Yeah.
You know.
And he was such a really happy guy. I've heard so many powerful stories about people. Chuck would just call and say, you know, how are the kids? How are you doing? I'll see you soon. We've had a core group of D.C. musicians that got close to Chuck, one of them Benji Parecki. And Benji misses him so badly because Benji would say, whatever the circumstances, there weren't a couple of weeks that went by where Chuck wouldn't call and check in on people that he cared about. And you can't help it when you're that kind of person. Your music takes on more truth, and you get more beloved than you could possibly imagine, because it's not like you don't have time. You make the time for situations and people in your life that mean something, and then your music takes on a whole different life.
It really does. You hit the nail on the head, and as long as we recognize that, you know, it would be nice for Frankie to be able to kind of step out and I'm sure he could. I mean, nobody can really stop him, but he doesn't want to put anything out that people don't receive. And
that's sad, man.
Yeah, but I tell you, I will. Yeah, it's almost a good thing being a guy that's not a superstar, you know, because you can do what you want to do, and you don't have to. For instance, you know, Beyonce, if she wanted to do a ska record or something like that, you know, I'm not sure people would come with her, even if it was something that she absolutely adored and was a part of her. She couldn't do a punk rock record and have people follow her, I don't think. It's just when people want from you what they want from you, that's what they want. They don't want anything else. And I think once you get to a certain status, you get so big that you no longer can do what you want to do. That's kind of the storyline of that television show Nashville right now.
Oh, yes.
The young girl, Juliet, wants to, you know, expand her horizons and do another thing, but her manager's like, no, you can't. Your fans want this. And I can sit there and go, wow, prisoner of fame.
You are right. And you know what? I've never thought about it in terms as you have just suggested, Kevin, because actually you do have the best of both worlds. If you say that you are not in a particular place where sometimes you would like to be as far as being boxed into a category, that's okay. You are free to do what you want, and that includes experimentation on any side of a genre. But
right.
God help anybody that follows you on stage. I would never do it. No. No.
I'm not so sure about that.
You need to close every time you're on that stage, because folks might as well just go home.
Now, that's sweet. I appreciate it. But I tell you, somebody who will follow me and put me in my place, and that's my very own brother, Kirk.
Well, that's okay.
You're right. He will do what's known by the young kids today as housing me. He will house me. As soon as I leave stage, they will forget that I was ever there when he pulls out that horn, buddy.
Well,
he does not play.
I understand that. I understand Kirk, because that's a whole different ball game. But anybody who has got a vocal cord who thinks that they can sing, no, you're it, and we're about to find out how much you are it, because I don't know. You know, you and I have spoken before on Cool Jazz Conversations, and I know Joy is going to be there tomorrow night. You best believe at LUV she's going to be there.
Trust me, I'm not so sure we could even play if she didn't show up. I mean, because it doesn't really feel real if I don't look down and at least see her in the first two or three rows just laughing and smiling and being her beautiful self. I love that woman. She is absolutely my girl.
And she will know every word of every song. And
right.
If you don't sing something that she likes, she'll tell you about it afterwards.
And Joy is not ever going to have to pay for another of my records in her life. Because, oh, by the way, working on something new, just so you know.
Really?
It's going to be a bit of a departure as far as how it is produced. The sonic value of it is going to be different. I want to do something a little different. I'm not going to say what, but just know that it'll still be melodies. It'll still be grooves, and I'm really, really excited about it. And
wow,
I should hopefully, if God can clear my faculties and kind of make some things line up for me on on the logistics side, I'll have this thing in people's hands by summer. Hopefully by hopefully by June. So
that's awesome.
Pray for me because I am in a great headspace about this idea. It took a long time to kind of decide, settle down which way I wanted to go. Now that I've kind of decided it, I'm like, yeah, this is exactly what I want to do right now.
Oh, Kevin,
so,
that's really exciting. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm really excited about it. I really, really am.
Then 2013 is going to be some kind of year because I know that you can continue to do your touring, and it's really a lethal combination when you and Kirk are on that stage. Honest to God, it's just like it's supposed to be. It's one of the musical experiences that people have to have. So if you don't, I'll post the information on my page so that people know where you're going to be. If there are a few folks who aren't awake yet as to where and what time and how much tickets are, it'll all be on my Facebook page.
Yeah. Lincoln Theater tomorrow night. I'm not sure of the start time. I never know. I mean, I go to too many cities, you know, whether or not it's 7, 8, 8:30, 9. I never know that, but I just know it's tomorrow night at the Lincoln Theater in D.C.
That's
and
awesome.
And Shante Moore is going to be doing her thing, and we're all just going to have a good time.
Oh, there is no doubt. And look, you have a standing invitation. Whenever this big project comes out, and if you just want to hang and play disc jockey with me someday when that is close and we can listen to some tracks and we can dig into your favorites so I can play them on the show, you are more than invited.
Thank you so much. And I'll make sure you have one of the first 10 copies of my new record. Trust me, I'll make sure you get it as soon as it's ready to go.
Kevin, it is going to be, I mean, people are so hungry to hear more of you. You are talked about in Baltimore, D.C. circles as you cannot imagine.
Wow. Well, God bless you because we're going to be neighbors real soon.
I know. That's awesome. Thank you so much for the time you took, and please be safe on that road. I'm a little nervous because you're driving because you know how it goes.
I'm all good. I'm actually near my house now, so I'm good.
Oh, that worked out perfectly. You are so sweet to take this time. Give your girls big hugs, and I wish you and the family well and the extended family that you're going to see tomorrow night in D.C. at the Lincoln.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, my good friend, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Kevin. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was a delight. Didn't know if that was going to work out or not, but it did. Kevin Whalum. And really, whenever he and Kirk get together, there is just something that is so, the first word that comes to mind is unified. That's just so on the same page. They have a particular kind of chemistry. Kevin is one of the best that has ever taken a breath, and you are going to get a sizable taste of that right now because this is from Romance Language, and this is perfect for Valentine's Day, as he was to have spent such a great deal of time. Kirk and Kevin Whalum, they say it's wonderful.
moon up above. Wonderful.
Thank you. that in the moon, shining down on me. It's such a long way home back to where I wanna be. Back in her arms again, look into her eyes. Heaven must be this way, she's an angel in disguise. When I hold her, I'll never let her go. Every day with her is Valentine's Day. And every night in her arms is paradise. Her smile is a full moon. Her laugh is a sunny day. Has a way about her that makes me feel this way. Yeah. Lonely old road, won't you carry me home? Back to the one I love, back where I belong.
I was going to do the show without playing that song. You kidding me? From the 90s, from Closer to Paradise. Now, here's how clever he is, Rascal. If you go to slimmen.com, you'll see the video. Now, the video certainly isn't years old. No, what he did was he did a new video last year because the gal, the sweetheart of Slim Man's dreams, is in the video, so he wanted to do something fresh in honor of her. Pretty cool, huh? Got some news to tell you as far as our Slimmy is concerned. This is so awesome. Now he's living in Nashville. He has been for a while. He's going to be doing his first Nashville Songwriters Showcase coming up on the 28th at a place called That's Cool. So, of course, all the information that you could possibly stand is at slimman.com. I'm really happy about that. Good for you. We also heard music from George Duke. Now, I'm going to gulp really hard here because I just found out it took a while for George to get his online schedule together. It always does. It takes about a month or two, and then he's good. He's got the schedule intact, and what did I see? What did I see but Al Jarreau and George at the Rehoboth Beach Jazz Festival in the fall this year? Yes. And then our good friend Lou Smith suggested that I might want to go to the Blue Note next month to see Stanley Clark and George. We're going to go. So we'll let you know. First time at the Blue Note, this is going to be quite a little road trip. So that's really cool. That was from Deja Vu a couple of years ago, a melody written, of course, by George Duke, who is playing Everything and His Mama on it, and then Michael Manson on bass, Ronald Bruner Jr. on drums, Paul Jackson Jr. on acoustic and electric guitars, Terry Dexter on vocals, our good friend Lyd Fidmont on vocals, Lamont Van Hook, and Shannon Pearson. Just love that song. Love the man. You know that. And Kevin Whalum from Romance Language. They say falling in love is wonderful. If God is good, I'll find that out this year, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much. We're going to do a couple more songs, pivotal songs. One of them that certainly encapsulates Valentine's Day, a song that was written for the 1937 musical called Babes in Arms. One of those songs, the lyric is kind of quirky. You really have to think about the lyrical content, although this has become one of the favorite songs for so many people, it's hard to say. Over 600 people, artists, have recorded this song. Play that first, done by Miles Davis. And then one of the definitive Valentine songs with a vocal that just says everything that you would want to say to your true love. On Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. 1996. It was sort of a hit for Levi Stubbs' beautiful interpretation of that with four tops. Well, actually solo, 1983, but Whitney took it there, man. Whitney, a year on February 11th. Just hard to believe. God bless her. Just so amazing to hear her sing, especially a song like that. Written by Sandy Linzer and David Wolfert. believe, I believe, I believe in you and me. We heard Miles Davis from Miles Davis Plays for Lovers with Coltrane and Red Garland and Paul Chambers and Philly Joe Jones on that particular track. All the best of the ballads from 1955 or 53 to 1956. Hope you enjoyed that. Hope you have a great Valentine's Day. I really am appreciative so much to Tim Green and to Kevin Whalum and to Amy and Matt and Beach, who's in here today in the chat room, and Yolanda and Griselda. It was really wonderful to have you and to spend Hot Day with all of you who I love so much. Tuesday on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, it will be from France, Daniel Dommage with his latest project. God bless you all, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a great weekend. Be safe. Be romantic.